Arbitrary power is not absolute philosophy. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the absolute philosopher. Now, the absolute philosopher is thinking about many things. And one of the things the absolute philosopher thinks about is arbitrary power, and that it is not absolute philosophy. Arbitrary power is a changeable condition that can be one way or another depending upon the human attitude of the thinker. It has nothing to do with what is right or wrong, or what is beneficial, or what is and is. Now, should something be and is, arbitrary power does not exist in its presence. Should something be a human attitude or a human direction, then it does not necessarily have arbitrary power either, but arbitrary power is an anathema to it. It is a very disturbing thing to a human being. Now, why is arbitrary power a disturbing thing for a human being? A human being is always ready to judge. A human being is always ready to have conclusions. A human being is always ready to be possessed by something, or be one-pointed in something, or to be untouchable in something, you know. You say, well, that doesn't sound like a human being. That sounds like an absolute being. Well, no, that's not an absolute being. That's a human being. A human being arbitrarily can be judgmental or non-judgmental, possessed or non-possessed, one-pointed or not one-pointed, and untouched or touched. Well, now, that's another point of view to look at. Well, look at it this way. If I say to you, let's go to the show, and you say, no, I don't want to go. Boy, you're arbitrary. Why don't you want to go to the show? Because I don't want to go. Well, you mean just arbitrarily you're going to say you don't want to go to the show when I had planned on going to the show and I had planned on taking you? Well, you can go to the show if you want. I'm just not going. Well, that's a rather arbitrary opinion on your part. Yes, it is. And that's what I have the privilege of doing. I can say yes or no. Woman so arbitrary, woman so changeable, light like a feather, none can tell whether you should believe her. You see, this is how Shakespeare and other writers have talked about women. Women are the most arbitrary things on the face of the world. They are totally changeable. They make a decision to do one thing, and then 10 seconds later, they change their mind. And they don't answer you why. See, that's the arbitrary thing. You cannot fight it because they don't answer you why. They don't tell you why they want to do something or don't want to do something. And because they don't tell you why, there's no discussion. It's an arbitrary, conclusive decision that has no one way or the other about it. You do it. Now, how does this fit in with the absolute philosophy? In absolute philosophy, there are no decisions. There are no judgments. There is no possession. So there can be no arbitrariness. Because in absolute philosophy, an is does not want to do or does not want to do something. An is just is. It has no desire to do something or a lack of desire to do something. It has no possession of its own self or of its purpose or its direction, because it has no purpose. It has no direction. It just is and is. Now, that's a tough consideration to think about in our philosophical thinking, because we are so used, so accustomed to thinking about things that are with arbitrary points of view. And because we think about these things with arbitrary points of view, with judgment, with possession, you know, with being touched and all that sort of good stuff, because we're thinking of that in that way, right away, we think that all considerations exist for all that exists. Well, here's another little surprise. The is does not exist For something to exist, it must have form and structure, and it must have something about it that defines it. An is you cannot define, can you? Mm-mm. Can you define an is? Mm-mm. You have no idea what words you should use to define an is. So an is you cannot even be arbitrary with, because it has no possession. It has nothing that says this is what defines an is. You cannot say that it's an is relative to another is. You cannot say it's an is that is in this particular location, because an is a concept. Can you go along with that? An is a concept. And as a concept, it has no here or there, now or never. It has no relationship at all to the human world. And this is what makes human beings very unhappy. Because human beings want everyone to have some sort of location. They want some, who are your family? Where do you come from? What sort of genes are you out of, you know? What sort of chromosomes are you out of? What sort of mother and dad did you have? What sort of aunts and uncles did you have? You know, what country were you? What nationality are you? You know, you hear all that? You hear all that? And you hear it wherever you go. People want to know your bio sketch, you know. They want to know everything about you. And what if you just went up to a person and said, hi? And they said, oh, hi, how are you? Gee, you're a nice person. Really? You're a thoughtful person. Oh, really? You're a loving person. Really? You sound like you're from Finland. Really? You sound like you are, you know, Scandinavian in your accent and so forth. Oh, really? You know, and the guy's only said really all the time. And so, where are you from? Who are your parents? Did you, were you born of the Nazi invasion of Sweden or Norway? Or how did you come into being? Because you have certain Germanic features about you. In fact, you have certain Mediterranean features about you, too. Your family must have been very widespread, bringing genes in from every possible location on the face of the European continent. And the is says, oh, really? You know? Oh, really? Why are you reading into the is all of these most interesting aspects? Why are you doing that? Because that's you seeing yourself in the is. You see, the moment we can stop seeing ourselves in the is, then we will be the allness as the is. We will be the nothingness as the is. We will be the expression of everything that's good and beautiful, and yet everything that doesn't exist at all. Now, do you have the capacity to think in that light? And the answer is yes, we do, but we don't do it. Can you think in the non-possession capacity? Or do you have to know their family tree? Can you think in the non-possession capacity? Or do you have to say, now, you're going to be here for 2 weeks, can you afford it? Well, why would we create anyone coming here and being here if they can't afford it? We don't ask if they can afford it. We just say, this is what it is. It's 10 cents a day. That's what you pay. Verstehe?
Beispiel.
It's a Beispiel, but a good one. It rhymed all the way through. Now, what's this all about? How does this fit in with the arbitrary power that is not absolute power? Arbitrary power that is not part of the absolute philosophy. Because the moment we step away from the possession, the one-pointedness, the non-judgmental aspects, the untouchability, the moment we are beyond that into the unconditional love, then there is nothing. There is nothing. Can you love something unconditionally when it has no beingness to it? Interesting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Can you love a wisp of air that's floating through the sky that has no beingness to it?
Yeah, we Because you love yourself.
You love yourself. Now, did we see smoke in the sky the other night from a valley that was on fire? And what's the first thing we said?
All is in divine
order. All is in divine order. All is in peace. And what happened when you said that? The smoke just got smaller and smaller and smaller. But the moment you started admiring the helicopters as they were dumping water on it, the smoke got bigger so the helicopters could do their job, so they could find something to dump water on. You see, if we are ideal, if we can look at the smoke and not see it, if we can not see the helicopters there or the bombers that come in with their water bombs, if we could not see that, we just look over there and we see a little haze, we say, all is in divine order. But then we see the helicopters and the bombers coming in, and we see all the smoke and the black smoke and the gray smoke and the blue smoke and so on. We think, wow, what's going up in smoke, you know? And then we think, oh, that's this type of thing that's burning and that type of thing. And you see, we become part of it. We are 20 miles away from where the fire was. Mm-hmm. But you are part of it. You are right in there thinking what is going on. And you are that fire. And you created that fire. Every one of us created that fire who looked over there and observed it. Because otherwise we would look over there and we'd see peace. Mm-hmm. Why don't you see fires now? It doesn't delight you, does it? Mm-hmm. Why did you see a fire then? Because it's kind of exciting. Why do we want to do it? And why do you create people calling you up and saying, I understand there's a fire up in your area? Mm-hmm. You know, like Daniel and Jeff and so forth. You see, they called up out of the goodness of their heart, but the goodness of their heart was, gee, I hope they get burned. Then I can go up and help them, and I can be needed, you know, because they don't need me, and I want to be needed. People want to be needed, and so they create these conditions in their world where they can be needed. You follow that? Mm-hmm. That's not bad, and it's not good. It's just dumb. Now, we should never let conditions get out of hand to the point where there's a need. Instantly, when you see a fire, what do you say?
It's all in divine order.
Yeah, that's exactly it. All is in divine order. Everything's in divine order. Why do you say that?
Because I am peace.
Because you are peace, and you can only see peace. You see, this is what happens when we are masters. We only see what we are. We only see the things that we are. Now, Ellen, we have a prayer treatment list, and we have about 300 names on there, 500 names, 1,000. And many of those people, some have ascended, some have left our circle of friends, and they're into another school of learning or whatever, and what have you. Now, how long are we going to keep people on that mailing list when we say that we only keep them on for a month, unless they're students or they're relatives of students, you know? Mm-hmm. So all of those people must be students or relatives of students, or else they wouldn't be there. And of course, the people who put them on there can renew their put on if they wish, and have them stay on for another month. Now, what would happen if we had that list pruned really to just our students, our relatives and personal friends, and people who were specifically asked by our practitioners to be on there? What if we did that? What sort of a list would we have? We'd have a list of maybe about 100. Maybe about two-thirds of one page, right? More than that, you think? Why do you think more than that? And speak up quickly while you're thinking.
Because we have a lot of names from students, and we have lots of repeating
now,
names.
Now, what do you mean by names from students?
Oh, well, for example...
Don't give me an example. What do you mean?
Practitioners.
People,
practitioners. 100.
All right, practitioners are 100. So,
and some of them have 10 to 12 names on the list.
Now, do they stay on each month after the month is over? Why?
Because we said so.
Well, were they renewed?
But they once, some of them said to
permanent.
Keep them on,
yeah. Yeah. Well, is that the kind of list we have? Mm. Is that what you want to do?
Yeah, we have the actually, we have the shortest list already, no? Mm.
Now, what we want to do is we want to arbitrarily slash away at the list and have people be on it who really want to be on it and who really want to have some benefit from it. Now, just to have a lot of names on our list is not a healthy thing. We want to have every one of those people choose to be on it or have practitioners who have chosen to put them on there. Or relatives who have chosen to put them on there. Because now, there are a number of people who are on that list who have no interest whatsoever in us. No interest whatsoever. And we are not able to be beneficial to them because they have no interest in us. Now you say, well, just by their association with us, they will be blessed. Well, that's not our purpose. I think what we should really become very familiar with, Jesus did not go into all the hospitals and heal the sick. He only went to those places and to those people where he was asked. And his list of people for whom he was asked to treat was relatively small. I couldn't imagine the number, but I would say it's less than 100 that he was asked to treat. And what happened when Jesus spoke his word for them?
It was done.
And did he keep them on the list?
No.
Oh, by the way, how's your mom? She was dying last week. Oh, she's dead. And how's your father? He was dying last week too. Well, he's doing just fine now. You know? Well, should we take your mom off the list? Or we take your mom off the list. She's not here anymore. Oh, no, no. She's on another dimension, but she popped back and forth here, and she wants to stay on the list. Oh, I see. How interesting. You see, this is why the word arbitrary is so important. We arbitrarily do things. There is no principle, there's no reason. We want everyone on our list who wants to be there, but we don't want anyone on the list who doesn't want to be there. And we have to intuitively know these things and intuitively work on it. So, you know, I've talked to some people and they were put on the list by some of their relatives or their practitioners, and they said, I'm not interested in that. I'm often another philosophy, another study, and so I'm really not pleased that I'm there because that's not what I want to do. And so this is something that arbitrarily we should think about and we should work on very carefully. Because if we're working in the oneness, in the allness, if we're working from the point of view that all is divine and all is perfect, then we should really have that as our consideration with unconditional love for each person on the list. So that's just a little something to think about. And it's always a lot of fun to think about these things. So think about these things because it's always a lot of fun to think about them. Arbitrary power is not absolute philosophy. Absolute philosophy is the is at work, being itself, and having fun, I guess, as an is would have fun. But it is not a matter of indiscriminately, that's arbitrary, indiscriminately saying something and enforcing it. It's a matter of we know intuitively who wants to be in our treatment list and who wants to have. Because you see, everyone on our treatment list is what, Ellen?
A reflection of me.
Everyone on our treatment list is what, Ingeborg?
It's me, myself.
Everyone on our treatment list is what, Sylvia?
Whole and perfect.
My God, my God, my God. Thank you, Sylvia. Thank you. I can see why you're the director of the prayer treatment list. Everyone is whole and perfect. They are on the list because they want us to see them whole and perfect. They're not on the list because they want to be themselves and have fun. They're on the list because they got their finger caught in the door. And they want to have their finger whole and perfect. So that's what we're doing. All are whole and perfect, right?
Yes.
Are you whole and perfect?
Whole and perfect I am.
Are you whole and perfect?
Yes.
Are you whole and perfect?
Yes.
Thank you. You know, one of these days, Ingeborg's going to have her own television show, and she's going to sit up there and go, you know, and Ingeborg, you got to speak up. And you see, you're on candid camera, and you're doing interesting things. And Ellen, what do you think?
I think that I know that I'm going perfect.
I think that's wonderful. Being that this is the case, I say, and so let it be, and so it always is. Amen, and good night, my angels. I love you, I love you, I love you.
Good night.